So yesterday we were discussing the basically the philosophical basis of management of leadership. That basically speaking, the jiva just has to accept that one can't get away from the Supreme Lord. One can't get away from God. So understanding that this is actually the position, then one, and one's reason one is in the material world, the cause of illusion is not being able to actually see God, because that's the reality. So then second canto then is giving us the understanding how we can see God in everything. Right, because the direct is what is important to God. The direct would mean him, his name, form, qualities, pastimes, you know, with his devotees. The loving pastimes where we're actually tasting rasa within transcendence. Then secondary to that, which he takes care of just with a, you know, Krishna says, a spark of his splendor, is this whole material manifestation. And so within that, then he comes and performs his pastimes, right, as Vasudev. And therefore, then we are able to be able to appreciate, you know, to be attracted to his name, form, qualities, and pastimes. But outside of that, the living entity is in the material world because he's attracted by the material facilities. Now, that's what brings the living entity to the material world, is he's attracted by the facilities. Right? The residents of the spiritual world, they see the facilities in Vaikuntha in relationship to the Lord. God is great, so Vaikuntha is great. It's very opulent, it's very wonderful, but they see it in connection with the Lord. And they like that environment. They like that opulent environment in which all the different rules and regulations and dealing with God is in place. But we see in Goloka is that the facilities aren't really the important element, right, at all. It's just convenient for expressing that particular kind of love. Right? That's what it is for. So the living entity being attracted by the spiritual facility doesn't see God in it. And so the place fit for that is in the material existence. So that's why he's here. So it becomes it becomes imperative that the living entity sees God in everything here, in the facility. So that's what we're attracted by. If we ask enough the questions, then one will come to the conclusion, yes, it's relationships, it's the personal dealings, it's those, the feelings, the exchange between people. But especially as the farther west you go, the more you have to dig to come to that position. Right? It's more obvious generally to Asians and like that, but as you continue west, it's the facilities. That's why the Asians are seen as strange by the Westerners. Because they're not as worried about facilities. They can live in simple environments, or they'll give up facility for a relationship. That's deemed odd by the Western mentality. Because there it's the facility that your name, your position, your power, your money, the facility you have, you're defined by that. So in that environment, if you don't know how to see that in connection with God, then unless you're really attracted by Krishna's pastimes directly, you love chanting the name, you're so absorbed in his pastimes, then you're going to be overwhelmed. Right? And if you're dealing in management, you're dealing with a lot of this. A lot of facility people worried about the facility. Why this one got the house, you know, that was available. You know, I've been in the temple longer. I'm senior. Why did they get it? You know, all this stuff. Positions, fighting over power, fighting over influence, egos, you know, how you say, wrestling with each other about, you know, because I said, you know, that's why it's got to happen. And no matter what, I will prove that I'm right, even though you're not right. Now, what is this? Is this Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes is so wonderfully and so sweet, you know, rolling off the tongue and just naturally popping into the mind? Or is this pure just mundane? So this Chaturshloka is how one can take that mundane and, like a thorn with a thorn, use it to take out that attachment and bring one's attention to Krishna at all times. So one can see, as if one doesn't know this, actually how good of a manager within a spiritual society can one be. Because one may be expert at moving the material energy. One has the technique. One has the ability, the vision. He has a plan, right? He has a goal. But what will you do with it? Once you have rearranged the material energy and gotten that external, visible, viewable form that you wanted, now what? That's what it comes down to. So leadership means you have to be able to teach others how to do this, because this is what the others are lacking. Right? So this is what you're supposed to be doing. Otherwise, then, when it means, it's like this. Before, as everybody lived in a temple. Why did everybody live in a temple? Because no one cared about society. It was like they saw this is rotten, this is terrible, so they created their own society on the streets of New York or wherever else they happen to be, in Hashbury or someplace. Right? But with time, we see now, where are all the devotees living? Are they living in the temple? There are devotees in the temple, and there should be devotees in the temple, and there always will be a temple. But where are most of the devotees living? They're living outside the temple. Some temples, it's, you know, 5 to 10, 20 devotees in the temple, and 300 to 500 devotees outside the temple. And what can the temple give these devotees? They can give them a temple program, an evening arti, a Sunday program, a Janmashtami program, and then what? And if they come and say, what am I supposed to do in this situation or that situation? Basically, all they're going to hear is, well, do whatever you want as long as you give some money to the temple. Now, is that community going to feel that this temple is doing something for me, for my life? So why would they want to give their money? Why would they want to give their time? Right? Time and money is considered very valuable. So why? And you exchange value for value. Relationship means you're getting something of value, so you exchange something of value. Right? Someone gives their time, you give time. Someone gives money, you give money. Someone gives emotions, you reciprocate with emotions. Right? So we can't underestimate this. We can't just blow this over that I got a new plan. You know, okay, well, that didn't work, so now we got this new plan. That's good. That means you're thoughtful. That means you're dynamic. But the point is do you want to be successful spiritually? Yourself personally, maybe, but as a leader, do you want to make others? This is the question. This is what is not dealt with. You go into any of your management meetings, this one, Covey, that one, what is it? Law of attraction, poor dad, rich dad, you know, whatever your dad, like this. You're never going to hear this stuff. Why? Because the people who are running it don't know this exists, and the people that they got it from don't know it exists. Because no one's talking Bhagavatam. Remember, who is listening to the Bhagavatam? Right? The top leaders of the universe. That's who was there. It wasn't just some schmoes. You know, no schlemiels, no schlemazels. Right? It was all leaders of the universe. So this Bhagavatam is talking on that level. It is so sophisticated that it's not appreciated. That's the point. So, it's an easy thing because all the devotees basically know all this. That's the fun part, is the tools that it takes to actually make the society successful, be able to actually lead the temple and the community. You already know. just you haven't connected the dots. So it's not like, oh, this is something new to learn, or I can't get into this, or I don't have time. All it requires is contemplation. And amazingly, yourself and your mind spend a lot of time together. Right? You know, so there's plenty of time in between. There'll be moments, of course, you have to really focus on something. But in between, there's plenty of time to think while you're walking, while you're doing this and that, sitting there for a few minutes. All these times. This is the time when this is applied. You will get benefit, others will get benefit. You can do it, you can teach others. You're chanting, therefore you can get others to chant. Right? You've surrendered your life, therefore you can inspire others to surrender. So the same way as if you're able to contemplate in this way, you'll be able to get others to do this. Therefore, this plan is given. It's the opening, actually, the Bhagavatam. The first canto is basically an invocation, just setting the scene for, just like you have the first chapter in Gita. It sets the scene so you know all the people, the environment, everything you need to know to actually understand the teachings. Right? Because the Bhagavatam was the discussion between Sukadeva Goswami Maharaj Pariket. So the first canto is the sages asking, you know, what happened? Why did it? Why was there discussion? What was the background? So then we learn all the background about Krishna and surrendering to Krishna and all these different aspects. Then we get there when he starts with the creation and all these points like this, the Chatur Shloki. That teaches us how to connect, because one has to be able to distinguish between the devotional activity itself, or what is the devotional element itself, and what is the medium of that devotion. Because if you can't, then there'll be the mistake that you may take the form itself to be exclusively the devotion. I'm going through the motions, therefore I'm Krishna conscious. No, you're going through the motions, that means you're going through the opportunities to be Krishna conscious. But if you don't see the Krishna consciousness, then a mistake can be made. Which may not bother you today, or even tomorrow, but the next day, someday it will get you. Because mundane has to be left here. Mundane can't be taken with you. Right? Even the karmis figured that out. Right? You just can't take it with you. So at some point, the reaction will come. Your inspiration for being involved in the management may be, naturally, because of one's conditioned nature, is that one's a manager, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, some people may say this, that. A few intellectuals may, you know, bash the managers, but that means they don't understand what they're talking about. But the problem is if one remains that attachment, that the reason you're managing is because of your attachment to management, at some point it's going to become a disturbance to your devotional service, because it's got to be pleasing Krishna. That's your exclusive goal. And you happen to do it through management. Right? Arjuna, he's a Kshatriya. So he even suggested giving up the Kshatriya duties, taking up the Brahminical, and Krishna laughed at him. Because he's not going to do that. It won't happen. A Kshatriya is a Kshatriya, Brahmin is a Brahmin, Vaishya is Vaishya. They will behave in that way. They can purify, but they won't change. Right? So it's a matter of purification. One is managing it now instead of, it's the inspiration to do the managing, it's the inspiration to be in charge, have power, have the influence over others, deal with the money, make the decisions, make the plans, to the point of is you want to serve Krishna. And how do you serve Krishna? Through dealing with the devotees, dealing with the money, making plans. You understand? That's what Sarva Dharma Parityaja is. So now to do that, to switch from the one to the other, you have to be able to distinguish between the two. And that's what the key that Krishna is giving. Okay? That's the key Krishna is giving. He's giving you how to dissect what you're doing or what anyone else is doing, so you can see what's the devotional force and what is the tools or medium you're using. Because the problem is not the tools. The problem is not connecting those tools to Krishna. Right? If one understands this, you get rid of us and them. Right? Leaders and those who are following. The temple and the community. The men and the women. Those who are, you know, serious and those who are not. You know, whatever it may be, you can get rid of this by understanding this. See, actually, you know, just for those who might, you know, think, expect something else. So you're going to walk in, there's some nice quick little techniques and that, and you do this and that, and that'll make everything work. That's another thing like that. Some of that will be discussed later, but the real point is, if you have this understanding, whether you have any technique or not, you'll work it out. If you're a manager, you'll work it out. If you're not a manager, of course, you won't work it out. And even if you're given the technique, it won't happen. Right? Just a side story on that. There's one devotee. He was from the Southern Hemisphere. I think he was like from Hobart or someplace. And he went to one of these big, big programs, I think in Australia. One of these big, you know, world, you know, I say management gurus was there. You know, thousands of business people who had spent thousands of dollars to be there. So it wasn't just some small thing. It was a big professional thing. And this devotee was contemplating all this, you know, thinking about it. As it finished, everyone else got up with big grins on their face, walked out, you know, feeling very confident and everything now. Until he noticed at one point in the hall, all there was himself and the person who gave the lecture. That guy was, you know, putting away his papers and his briefcase. So he got up and walked up to him. And he said, you know, nice program, nice presentation and everything like that. You know, there was some exchange. Then the devotee asked, so how many people here will actually be able to use what you said? What's the statistic? And the guy just kind of stopped and looked at him and said, none of them. He said, it's just known. No one here will be able to use it, because if they could use it, they wouldn't be here. They'd be already doing it, because these things are just practical common sense for any manager. But they can't figure it out, so you analyze management and give it to them. They want to hear this, so you're trying to help, and like that. You know. So amongst those who are the big gurus, they know that it's not going to happen. Like that. Otherwise, why is it? So the point is that you're a manager. You can work it out. You have brain for it. Just like a business person can work out how to make profit. He'll try this way, that way. We see so many of them. Big businessmen. They've done this for five failed businesses. Then the sixth one works, and they become very successful. It just took a while. Someone else, their karma is a little better, they work it out, or they're born into it. All right? But as a manager, as a leader, you can work out how to guide those under you. That you can do. Right? Otherwise, why would you be in the position? Why would you have that facility? But the question is the quality of it. That's what we're discussing. So it's not a matter of, oh, I don't know this technique or that technique. No. It's a matter of, we don't know the perspective that is broad enough to be able to accommodate anything. Prabhupada could go anywhere. He was in the Bowery with all these potheads and acid heads. Right? And it wasn't that, oh, I can't work with them because they're tripping. No, he just starts with whatever he has, right? Isn't that one of the first business principles? Like, you've got to work with what you got. So Prabhupada could do that. He's living in the Agarwal's house in Butler, right? He's sharing a refrigerator with all of their non-vegetarian, you know, products. You know, they smoke, and if they ask him, is this a problem? He said, no, Kawhi, because he's a guest. It's not that, well, I know the absolute truth, you guys are nonsense. No. You're dealing with souls. Souls at the position they are right now is what you have to deal with. Right? And what you'd like them to be is what you have to get them to. You have to work out the plan. You can't just say, well, this is God and this is Krishna conscious. Now do it. You know, otherwise you're a nonsense. No. Leadership means you figure it. Otherwise, if they have to work it out themselves, why do they need you as a leader? That's the point. You got to work it out. So that means you have to be able to accommodate anything who's going to walk through the door of whatever you're in charge of. Right? If you can do that, then you can really expand the preaching. You can expand everything because you can work with anything. You have this mentality, you'll be able to work with anyone. You have this mentality, you'll be able to establish Varnashram. Right? Varnashram. Look at, you have someone who's... principle drive is that it's the scriptures, that it's truth. Right? You have another group who will do everything based on scriptures, but their main drive is that it's right, it's just. Another group that if it doesn't make money, they couldn't care less. Right? And another group, if they can't express themselves and feel comfortable and, you know, feel reciprocation, they don't care. Now, how different is that? Right? Those who are studying, not interested in family life, those who are just interested in family life and do how it's studying and other things they can, those who are interested in the opposite of that, simply trying to restrict the senses and that, and then finally, those who couldn't care about whatever situation they're in. Now, is that a variety or not? Now, Varna means you can accommodate. Why can't the devotees establish Varnashram? Because they're looking at the form of it. Okay, if you're out there, your fingers are dirty, you got dirt under your nails and there's some carrots growing out of the ground, you got Varnashram. But in this whole discussion, we mentioned the four Varnas and Ashrams. I didn't hear the word carrot. Right? In other words, that's something, one of the ways Vaishyas do things. But their point is profit. Not that they're growing carrots. This is not some NGO, you know, feel-good kind of thing of, you know, we're, oh, doing some nice stuff, natural, self-sustaining, and all that kind of thing. No. The point is, it's God's creation, and we have to be in tune with God's creation. That's the idea. That's why the simple life, the natural life. Not that natural life is something special. You're living with, natural means you're living with more natural dead matter rather than something that has been, you know, adjusted by man dead matter. You know what I'm saying? So ultimately, what is the soul care about these things? So one has to be able to get to the essence. Saragrahi. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the advanced devotee is saragrahi. He can take the essence. Then he knows how to work. Problem comes, we don't know the essence. We know the essence. Then in any situation, we'll work it out. Because how many examples can you give? Right? There's unlimited manifestations of the material existence. So you can only give so many examples to give you an idea. Then the rest of it you have to work out. You can't work it out, that means you work under a leader, right? And if you can work it out, then you're a leader who works under other leaders, right? So the difference between a leader and someone who's not is if they can work it out. That's the difference. You can't work it out, then you're not a leader. You need someone to help you with it, right? And if you can work it out, then you can help others because you worked it out for yourself. So the same process, you can help others work it out for them. Right? Yes. Oh, you're just okay. Right. Does this make sense? The background of this? So then, looking at it practically, is that means anything that there is connected to Krishna. It's working because of that. Right, you walk down the street. What's at the corner? There's a poster with the names of the streets on it. Where'd the concept of name come from? Krishna, right? He's a name form called. So it's the same thing. That potency that this street can be named. That actual ability is there. That comes from Krishna. You understand? You know that post holds things off the ground. That potency for that post to do that. Why do people do that, right? because it's connected with God. Everything is there. Economics, everyone works with it. It's coming from God. Why does it work? Any community, any place, the economics are the same. Right? You get something for cheaper than what you sell it for. Right? Basic principle. Right? Unless, of course, you sell it for cheaper than you bought it. Right? You know, you can do it backwards also. Like that. You understand? So this is there. Marriage, family life, parents. Has any kid ever asked, what's a mommy or what's a daddy? No. You have to tell them why the sky is blue and the grass is green. But you don't have to tell them, well, who's that? Oh, that's this one's mommy. They don't ask a question, what's a mommy? Why? Because these things are eternal principles. Eternal social principles created by God. You understand? So this is the point, is to be able to anything, look at it and see it in that way. Like when Prabhupada went down to the harbor and there's all these big boats and big machineries, and Prabhupada says, what is this? And devotees, oh, ugra karma, or this is this nonsense or that nonsense or all kinds of karmi nonsense. And went on and on and on. Prabhupada said, no, this is sex life. And they're looking at the ships and going, wow, that's kinky. And so like that. So then Prabhupada says, the reason the guy has this company is so he can have sex in the way that he wants it. You know, he wants to be on the penthouse suite on the 87th floor on the Upper West Side. But he has to have that shipping company to do it. That's Sardagrahi, or the bird. There's a big pile of bird stool in one place. Prabhupada said, what is this? Devotees, well, it's bird stool, or, the material world is, like stool. Or, on and on and on. Prabhupada said, no, this is attachment. Because the bird is always sitting in that one place. So this is the symptom. In other words, what you see are the symptoms of what's actually going on. If you think that what you see is what's going on, that's a mistake. Right? But remember, because this is what you're going to hear from all the management gurus, it's better that you're inspired by what you see and want to do something with it rather than you're not inspired at all. Does that make sense? The mode of ignorance is useless. Right? It's illusion, it's laziness. It's like this. So Prabhupada said, what is a temple? No lazies, no crazies. It means no ignorance. People are willing to work. They're willing to see things in a Krishna conscious perspective. Mode of passion is better because people are active, but they're doing the wrong action. They're absorbed in what they're going, working for what they can see, getting something observable. Some, I do the work, I get the result. Right? This is their purpose. So, all you have to do is now take that out and put Krishna. It's the yoga process, right? The yoga process is you do the right things, right? Yama, niyama. You situate yourself properly, asana. You, control your activities, pranayama. You bring in the senses, pratyahara. And you focus, dharana. Once you've focused, then you can put Vishnu into it. So the people who were, they're active, they're doing something. So they've gone through these stages. They're in business, they're not doing what's wrong for business, they're successful, they're doing what's right, they've situated themselves in the economic environment, they're controlling the senses, otherwise why do they have money and capital, otherwise they would have spent it already. Right? And they're focused on doing that work. Their problem is they think something, external is their goal. All you have to do is replace that with Krishna. But it doesn't mean the other things are replaced. You have to see them in connection with Krishna. It's Krishna's rules on what's good and bad for business. Right? These are eternal rules. Right? How to situate yourself there, how to be focused. It's all God's laws. It's not some guy made it up and put it in a book. He's observing what's already there. What's the difference? He's smart. He's got a good observation. He's got the patience. He looks at it for years. And then after years, he writes it in a book. Right? So that's what he's doing. Yes?
Is I didn't understand why you said that it's better if you find something attractive so you feel inspired to work with it. I understand why
it's better.
I didn't understand how that was connected to what else you were saying.
Oh, how it was connected of things being, okay, you're inspired to do something because of the mundane element, how that's connected?
Yeah.
Because action is better than inaction, right? You're only going to get a result from action. See, that's one thing that the Vedic culture is teaching, is that it's only through activity you get a result. Right? You make an endeavor. You're hungry. Unless you make the endeavor, you don't get something to eat. Unless you pick it up, put it in your mouth, you don't eat. Unless you chew it and swallow it. You have to work. So the idea is that since working is the principle, is that whatever it is you're inspired to work as, so you start there. Right? And then you connect that to Krishna. Right? Then connected to Krishna, then you try to purify it. Right? This is Rupa Goswami's definition of pure devotional service. It follows the same padati. That's why we don't have to worry. You can take any verse and then convert it into anything you want. You want to explain management, you want to explain business, you want to explain art, like this. Pure devotional service is defined as someone is conscious, that consciousness, they are God conscious, that God conscious is favorable to Krishna, and that favorableness means it's free from karma and jnana. That's Rupa Goswami's definition of pure devotional service. That's the, as you could say, your root verse, you know, or one of the main root verses of Nectar Devotion, right? So, in other words, if you're not conscious, how will you be God conscious? That's why someone who's not conscious of their environment, it's hard for them to be God conscious also. Right? There's this idea if you're just, you know, floating and not aware of anything, then you're spiritual. No, that's called spaced out. Maybe there's pleasant spaced out, not so pleasant spaced out. You know? But the point is that the person is focused. If you're conscious, then only you can be God conscious. If you're not conscious, how you be God conscious? Right? The yoga system, then you have to already be conscious, then you can put Vishnu there. Right? Like that. So, one is conscious of the environment, and that environment you see through the perspective of management. And you, therefore, are inspired to be involved in that management, right? So there's inspiration, there's something dynamic to work with, right? Then that you connect to Krishna. So therefore, I'll manage for Krishna. But with time, you have to understand that your inspiration can't be because of the management. Ultimately, it's got to be because you want to please Krishna. The residents of Vrindavan aren't doing stuff because they're inspired by Mother Yashoda's. Not that she's like, you know, just, you know, the top cook in the you know, the cosmic creation, you know, like that after Radharani. And so that's why she's inspired to cook for Krishna. You know, if she's going to cook, she's the best cook, so she's going to cook, so she might as well be cooking for God, right? You know, because otherwise no one else would be able to really appreciate her cooking. You understand? No. She wants to serve Krishna. And as his mother, she cooks. And so then she works out how to cook good. You know what I'm saying? In other words, your drive to please Krishna makes you improve the quality of your management. Otherwise, then you'll only improve the quality of your management when you're inspired to improve it. I'm manager, I want to be the best. But once you get on the top, then it's done. You know, you won't do anymore. And then you'll fail. Because it's either going up or you're going down. There's no in between. Right? So, to be able to distinguish between these two, to be able to tell what is, okay, Krishna is everything, and so therefore what I'm attracted to, then that specifically I have to see Krishna in. Because I walk down the street, I don't notice most of the stuff there. And that doesn't matter. But what I do notice, that's what I got to connect to Krishna. So that's how you tell, someone comes into my office and they need some advice, how do I advise them? You advise them by what is their value. Otherwise, I can tell them so many things, it won't matter to them because they don't see that. You know what I'm saying? The brahmachari walks in and you talk about your attachment to your son. He doesn't have one. What does it matter? Right? So that's what it mentions in the beginning of the Mahabharata. is that Suta Goswami then spoke to the sages of Naimisharanya according to their position and nature. They wanted to hear about the snake sacrifice, but they're sages. So he told them in words and in examples and everything for them as sages. Right? Well, if he had been asked by some kings, he'd tell it slightly different. Some other family persons, he'd tell it different. Right? So you have to be able to adjust it according to the person that you're talking to. So it's not that I have my idea. That idea works for you. You have to see how that same principle is applied to the person you're dealing with. What is their values? How do they see it? How do they identify themselves? You know, that's their sambandha. What do they see as the field of activity? Then you know. So what are they inspired to do within that? That then you know your topic, and that's also how you situate them varnashramically. Right? Then, what is the goal? What is it they're trying to gain? Does their goal actually have something to do with the field of activity? And they have to make a connection. And then, therefore, what activity should be performed to get that goal? And the ability to be able to see, I'm performing the activity, is it moving me towards my goal, or is it not? If it is, great, I continue. If it's not, I have to make an adjustment. You understand? So this simple technique of understanding the sambandha abhidhaya and prayojana, a relationship, process, and result, by these four divisions that are given, of the chaturshloki. Just that itself, one can become an excellent manager. Right? Otherwise, why is it someone who's been a manager for the last 10, 15, 30 years, is going to management, training programs? They say, oh, well, the professionals do it. But the professionals also, probably did 4 years before that to get, or 6 years before that. They did their MBB and then their, their BBA and then their MBA. So they did 6 years of training. Now they're getting 2 weeks. Some latest jargon, some latest little something like that. But why is it that that professional, that MBA, never becomes the CEO? Because he only knows technique. And why is the CEO the CEO? He doesn't have an MBA. In fact, he started off sweeping the office floors. But he's observant. He sees relationship, process, and result. He's able to see beyond that. Therefore, he becomes the actual manager. And these others, they're managers, but they're shudras. They're actually shudras. The professional guys in the suits and the five-star hotels with their briefcases flying around the world and all that, on behalf of the businessmen, they're shudras. High-grade shudras. Very sophisticated, very intelligent, qualified, but shudras nonetheless. They're not managers. In the context we're saying, as leadership. They're managers. Right? Does that make sense?
I have one other. You said that these, understanding these four aspects from the Chaturshloki, just like that one can become a good manager. So, if I understand correctly, the second aspect is seeing, after seeing the situation, is that you connect it to Krishna.
All of them you connected to Krishna. See, the first one is Sankarshan, where you're the field of activity.
And the second is what attracts you to it.
What attracts you to it, that's Prajumna. Right? In other words, in Sambandha there's two parts. Is what is the field? Just the definition of everything in the field. Then what attracts you to that field? Because there's so many aspects of the field. What part attracts you? It's just like, let's say, we take a business field. Like that, but somebody's just attracted to, going and purchasing stuff. So they're not a businessman, they're a shudra who is a marketer. They can go to the market, get a good price on things, go around, research, get the things and like that, bring it back. That will be sold by the businessman. Right? They're attracted to getting the profit through, manipulating the things that they're selling in that market. That's the businessman. Right? In other words, the field is there, then you have to see what is their attraction to that field. Right? So these two are there. That attraction by contemplation, right? That's why people say the law of attraction. You just keep thinking about it. Throw it out. Think that you've already done it. These are just tricks. It's not that that's what gets the work done. It's what Krishna says. By contemplating the object of the senses, one develops attachment. Because the people who discuss law of attraction know that if you're attached to something, you'll do it. But they don't actually understand the difference so much between. They don't understand the science. They know if you're attracted to something deep enough, you'll work for it. But they don't understand there's a difference between attraction and attachment. Right? Does that make sense? So, like this, they're simply presenting already parts of our philosophy. Right? So, you're attracted to something, therefore you are attached to it. When you're attached to it, you'll work. So, he just targets the one thing. Just be attracted to it. So all he does is emphasize Prajumna. Right? Does that make sense? Then there's the other one that you have to have your plan and move for it. They emphasize Prayojana. Because they'll talk about the plan long enough that you'll actually become inspired. And therefore you'll become attached to it by contemplation. And then you'll work. Right? And someone else, they know how to do everything. They're not inspired. So then they say, no, you're born rich, you can do it, you know, like this and that. So they're creating that confidence, which is Shankarshan, my identity. And if the identity is there, automatically they do. They've somehow or another lost their inspiration. So all these different schools concentrate on one aspect. That's why it's so easy or simple. It looks, oh, this is straightforward, this is practical. But when you combine all three together, like our philosophy gives, then it becomes very sophisticated. And then we think, oh, well, this is just theory. No, it's like you take them all at once, look at them all at the same time, and know exactly what one does with the other. If you don't know the field, you don't know who you are, you're going to do nothing. If you don't have inspiration, you don't have a desire, you're not going to get anywhere. If you don't have a goal and know where you're going, then how will you act? Does that make sense? So all these four aspects, then you understand this. This applies in anything. You want to brush your teeth. You got your teeth. You got the toothbrush, the toothpaste. You know, you got the mirror to look at yourself in. You got the sink. You got the tap. You know, which one you want to turn, like this and that. You know, if it, you know, it's there. It's a high sink, so you have to be standing. You know, you can't be down sitting on the ground in your lotus position. You know, doing your meditation and brush your teeth. So you have to know the field. Then you are inspired. You want clean teeth. Right? You want to brush your teeth. You want to follow the rules of brushing your teeth. Whatever it is. So you have your goal. Okay, clean teeth. So then, to do that, I need the toothbrush. So I get it out. I know the toothbrush. So I know which end to hold. I know where the bristles go. I take the tube of toothpaste. I know which end to, you know, hold. I know that there's a cap on it. I have to take it off. I know how to squeeze it. Otherwise, my wife's going to kill me because she hates the, you know, squished up, you know, tube of toothpaste, you know. That's why it was godsend, the plastic ones, right? It doesn't matter where you squeeze it, right? So, like this. Then you get it on there. Then you get it into, you know, and then you put the other one down like this. You put the cap on, otherwise you know your kid's going to come and squeeze everything out. So then you put it in your mouth, you brush your teeth, you know, and then you know the dentist have told you, you know, circles or up and down or whatever it is that they tell you, and then you rinse your mouth out, right? And then you look at your teeth in the mirror and it looks good, you know. Then you feel confident, right? You've attained your goal. But that was all those four aspects. So you know what I'm saying? So that's brushing your teeth. So management, anything is exactly the same.
So what was the inspiration? The inspiration and the goal, are they different?
Inspiration and goal. Inspiration, what you're inspired by. Goal is what you need. Right? In other words, inspiration is what you're interested in or what you want. Goal is what you need. They're two different things. Just like you walk down the street, look in a shop, you see some nice thing in the shop. It's interesting. It's inspiring. You would like it, but if you don't walk in the shop and buy it, it wasn't a need. You keep walking down the street. Oh, it'd be nice to have that. That's desire. Need is you have to have it. You walk in the shop, plug down the money, and walk out with the goods. You know what I'm saying? We desire so many things, but we only work for what we need.
So you have to use your intelligence to see what you need.
You have to use your intelligence? Yes, that's why the Shastras are. That's why the first opening point was that Prabhupada says as a manager can't work not according to Shastra. Because otherwise, you don't necessarily... God knows what a human being needs. He knows what a Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra needs. He knows what a Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasa, Brahmachari need. So therefore, that's what they endeavor for. That's their duties. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So based on that, then you use your intelligence and get the work done. Right? Because that's the thing. Manisha means is the inspiration is you have a situation that must be solved. You know, there's a distance between what you have and what you want. And you have to use your brain and your energy to get the two to match. So that process of crossing, that's the profit of a leader. Right? Profit is in the difference. You know, for the artist, I have the facility, whatever it is, the environment, I have what I want to express. So bridging that gap, that's their profit. You understand? So that's how it works. It's very simple. Yes.
Maharaj, what to do when spiritual society, we observe that there is an overwhelming prominence of those who appear to be motivated mostly by the desire for power and influence. And they seem to lock in certain strategies or certain means of action, which seems to just give them the opportunity for that power and influence.
Oh, okay. Nice expression.
So how do you change that situation?
How do you change? Could you hear in the back?
No.
So his question is this. What to do in a situation where you have a spiritual society and it's seen that there's a prominence, you know, in the environment, like in the ether, of the endeavor for, you know, power and influence based on the inspiration for that. And so how do you adjust that to something that's actually connected to the spiritual? Is that covered? I leave something out. Because you said something really nice there that I think.
Well, it seems that the projects...
Okay, the projects. Okay.
Selected in this environment.
Okay.
Serve a particular purpose.
Okay. In other words, questions on the. In other words, the project that the manager is doing is actually for manipulating, you know, the material energy to create the project and the taste of doing that.
Let me give an example.
Okay,
that was. Say, good. Even building a congregation.
Okay. Building a congregation.
Which is perfect, it's fine.
Okay.
But the mood may be build a congregation, the community, to just have more people underneath.
Oh, to have a power base.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Or a money base. Okay. And the focus may not be the growth of those people.
Okay. Yeah. Could you hear?
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, the Vedic, that means. How you say? Ultimately, the point is education. The Vedic system is education is the central figure. That's why the Brahmins are considered the top. Not that they're managing everything or organizing everything, because they have the education. And they educate one in the fundamental core principles. And because of that, then whatever your position, you're successful. Right? Like every Kshatriya trains under a Brahmin. Every Kshatriya keeps Brahmins in his court, in his daily, you know, life and activities. But it's not necessarily that those Brahmins can do what he does. If you have one, great. You know, like if Vasishtha Muni is your Rajguru, you know, or Vishwamitra or Durvasa, then, you know, great, because they could run the kingdom themselves. But if they can, it doesn't matter, because they give you the knowledge by which the Kshatriya then will apply his, how you say, his natural ability. So education becomes actually the central point. So now, in this, the solution is still going to be education. So ideally, it's that you can run some kind of educational thing, but it's not based on some technique or this or that. I mean, other than spiritual techniques, is based on spiritual understanding and the technique how to use that understanding, you know, how to bridge between that philosophy and the practical application in your life. then if you don't have the opportunity for that, let us say the person doesn't interested in the philosophy in this way. You know, he means, of course, he's interested in philosophy. He's a devotee. He'll know the philosophy, but he's not connecting it to his, you know, his power base or money base or, you know, like this. Then someone else who is educated and who does work on these principles then would have to give him inspiration on how to do his work so he actually gets that power base and his money base. But they're using the techniques, you know, the eternal techniques given by Krishna. And so it'll always be explained in that way, but it's being explained as something practical. So with time, even though he's not interested in the philosophy, it's just given in essence, but it's practical and it works. And he gets his power base or gets his money base, his influence, his prestige, whatever is his drive. But he'll have gotten it, one, in connection with Krishna because of the directional authority. And he'll have gotten it through the correct method. And then with time, if their sincerity is there, of course, then it will start to dawn and the Krishna conscious element will come through. But that's the problem, is one has to wait. So one may be waiting. However long is that drive, that passion, however, it may be that long. You know? That's the difficulty. Just like Maharaj Vena. As long as he wasn't actually being a disturbance to the Brahminical culture, then he was, you know, a good manager. But as soon as he came to call himself God and then was restricting the Brahmins, that they couldn't perform their duties, then the Brahmins got together and removed him. Right? Does that make sense? Just like Prabhupada, how does he say a temple president's removed? You know, some GBC have to get together. The Brahmins get together and then they decide this man is unfit. Then they can remove him. You know, so it's not a power thing. It's a matter of the culture's not working. The philosophy's not being applied. So as long as the person is, in other words, he is creating the congregation, he is bringing it up, you know, the money is coming in, people are inspired and all that, but he's not working for the individual, that someone else could do in the meantime. So the person who is in charge, you know, in this case, you know, you'd probably be someone on a higher level. Either that would be somebody in a department, and then they would be controlled by the temple president, or that would be the president, he's controlled by the GBC. So then they would see to it that the other side, that there's someone else who's going and preaching, because that person who's only interested in the power and money base isn't really interested in the preaching, as long as he doesn't think that the preacher has more influence. So therefore, you'd have to put in a preacher who is very unassuming, you know, very obviously Brahminical, because the more obvious is the externals, you know, I mean, say, you say, the more obvious is someone's attachment, the more obvious the externals can be. So they, because they're so much in passion, they're not going to be threatened by someone who's so much in goodness. So you couldn't pick another dynamic person, well, that will create the balance. No, no. The point is that'll just create a war there. They're already doing the work. You just need them to be preached to. And then with time, he'll either come up and understand it, or you have a nice Krishna conscious community, and the guy will, you know, sideline himself anyway. Why am I wasting my time here for Krishna? I could be out making money in the world, you know. You know, people who really appreciate my abilities, you know, like that. So in any case, he'll either come around or go away. But you have to be intelligent to know how to divide it up, you know, because it's the result that you're looking for, Krishna's satisfaction. So this person's been engaged. He did create the community as far as the form, the mechanics of it. He's created. He's done well. He manages it well. And it's supportive. The temple is taken care of and everything. But you have to get other people to do the completeness. You know, so in other words, that's Varnashram, engaging everyone according to what they actually can do. Like that. And don't expecting more from them. You know, like the person, he runs the business and this and that. So what you want from him is the profit. Because that's what he's interested in. So he makes profit. He does runs a business for the temple. The temple gets some profit. But he's only doing it because of profit. So he needs profit. So he may take a big chunk of it, but you have the rest. You don't look at it that, well, he's making $100,000 for the temple, but he wants $25,000. You know, that's nonsense. Why doesn't he surrender? If you don't give him the 25, you don't get 75. You want 75? He gets 25. you know, then you have something. But if you expect him to be, you know, like the, you know, temple pujari and all that, and surrendered and live with nothing, then you don't know vaishyas. You don't know the nature. So that's why we fail, is because we expect everyone to be that, you know, simple, humble, completely surrendered, you know, temple devotee who you can, you know, step on them, put them through the blender, and it doesn't matter, and they'll come out fine, you know, like that. But the thing is those who can do that, that's why those ones are actually to be respected, you know. And if those are respected, then everything goes now. And see everybody else for who they are. But there's checks and balances. But the checks and balances, because it's so delicate, those are defined by Krishna. When we try to define the checks and balances, it won't work. It just won't work. That's the difficulty. We can apply what the Shastra says to the specific situation, but we can't create the situation. We're not in that position. You know, we're not. We are not existence. Krishna is existence. So that means whatever we see, that's the first verse of the Chaturshloki, is he is existence. So whatever you see is him. We can simply have an interest and a desire and a need to work with it. But we can't create it. Even we're trying to create, it's still according to Krishna's laws. Krishna's actually doing it. That's what Paramatma's doing. That's the second verse. The second verse, we have a value, therefore we work with it. That's Paramatma. Seeing Krishna in everything, that's Parabrahman. Working with it, that's Paramatma. Doing it to please Krishna, that's the third verse. That's Bhagavan. Is this?
Yeah. Certainly, I am very grateful because it gives me a very good platform for working. Now, one question. You mentioned how the preacher, ideally working with these personalities, should be unassuming. One way of dealing with that.
That's, we're taking it that the person, we're just taking it in more extreme, that the person is very worried about his power base.
Okay.
So if he's not so worried about the power base, he just wants to be recognized for it, then you can put in a very dynamic person. You just have to see, in other words, his ego is part of the equation. You can't just say, well, you're not supposed to have ego. Because that's if we didn't have ego, we wouldn't say that. You know, that's the thing.
My question is, we have preachers who are not unassuming just because of their spiritual.
No, unassuming meaning that they don't. They're not. In other words.
But my question was really different.
Okay, go ahead. Okay.
So we do have, fortunately, a number of preachers who are not unassuming because they're just because of their. Spiritual influence or charisma, we could say, they are influential.
Okay.
And so sometimes we see that there seems to be a dichotomy or a conflict between the managers and the gurus.
Okay,
and the
managers
say,
and gurus.
This is my place, this is my people, these are the money of these people are my money, and the guru comes and these people give the money to the guru.
Uh-huh.
And this is bad.
Yes.
And so there is a tension in some areas along these lines.
Yes.
Because the preacher are not the unassuming preachers.
Okay. I take it that this is a purely theoretical thing that you're throwing out just as an example. Repeat the question. Okay. Our question is that, let us say, this is another aspect, is that let's say the preacher is not unassuming. And so, therefore, he comes in, he is influential and all that, and in this case, he's a spiritual master, something that is seen in this way. And so, then there's a conflict between him and the temple president, because the temple president says, this is my city, you know, my, you know, money, my devotees, you know, my everything, you know, and so he doesn't appreciate that the devotees have some sympathies in this way, give money to this, you know, preacher and all these different things, because it all should be there. It's not right. They're in control. So, that would be, then it's an understanding is ultimately none of it's ours because it's Krishna's. We're simply the caretaker. As soon as we have that, it means this sense of possession has its limitations. The more it's there, of course, it has to be factored in, but the more there's a problem. Right? So especially if they're dealing with, see, the element of possession as a prominence, as a motive, that's a feminine nature. The masculine nature has to be not based on attachment. Even though that may be ultimately the drive, but the methodology can't be using attachment. The feminine uses attachment. That's why it always has the emotional content to it. That's its value. So if the president is taking that view, he actually puts himself in the feminine position. And the devotees, the zone, the money of that zone, that is the masculine element. So he's dependent upon that, controlling that, to maintain his self-esteem, maintain the relationship. In other words, he's a temple president only because everybody else accepts him that way and does what he says. But a temple president is a temple president whether anybody's there or not. It's a mentality. Because, you know, just like someone goes in the new era, you had, you know, probably trained devotees. They were there, you know, 3 months in the movement, 6 months, or whatever it is, send them to a new area. But because they had the mentality of a leader, they went in and within time, they created everything else around them. But this person is actually, it's the opposite. He can't create it. He's dependent upon it. It makes him, not he makes it. So he's not a leader. So that's going to create a lot of problems. So it's only through, you know, education in the philosophy that he'll be able to work, you know. And if people are smart in one sense, then teachers who have a problem with that, if you can't, you don't have the ability to influence, or the local GBC is not influencing, then you just avoid that zone. You just stay away. Like that. You know, which is not ideal, but it's one way to solve it. But otherwise, then in that case, it's the GBC's business to, because they're supposed to also be the Brahminical influence, and try to teach them that, yes, this is here and this and that. Because ultimately, even if you look at the mundane, is, according to Manu, is the administrator gets 1/6 of both the good and the bad qualities of whoever is dependent upon him. Right? So the temple president takes 1/6 if he's protecting the devotees. He gets 1/6 of their good qualities, and he gets 1/6 of their bad. Right? If he's not protecting them, he gets 100% of the bad, no good. Like that. That's just the way administration works. You know, just like the Brahmin does a yajna, he gets karma. Like that. So the Kshatriya also, that the administrator post also. So that would mean now, if that devotee gave now, if you give in charity, just because generally it comes down to, the bottom line is money. So we know we're actually not talking here Kshatriya. Kshatriya would be talking justice, who's in control, but it's actually economically based. So we're talking Vaishya here. So then, again, one of the duties of a Vaishya is to give in charity. So it should be that temple is giving in charity to that preacher. Now, if you give money to someone who's just, you know, needs money, you know, poor person, needy person, whatever you gave, you'll get back exactly the same amount in the future. Let us say the person is posing themselves as a Brahmin, right? Posing themselves as somebody advanced spiritually. By giving to them, you'll get back double. Just for considering the principle of, Krishna says Brahmins are respectable, and you're respecting him based on that. You know he's not. But you're still reciprocating because he presents himself. You'll get back double. Now let us say that that personality is, you know, somewhat, you know, studied and educated and that, you know, scholarly. Then you'll get back 10,000 times. If the person is realized in that, he like that, you'll get back 100,000 times. And if they're, you know, someone like Prabhupada, it's unlimited. So now, if that devotee in your congregation, your temple, gave something to that spiritual person, then there's every chance that if he is, you know, a prominent preacher in that, he's in the 10,000 or 100,000 times category. Now, 1/6 of that will go, benefit of that goes to the temple president. Now, let's say that temple president has 20 devotees, and they're all giving to their spiritual masters. He gets 1/6 of all that. You add it up. That's a lot more than any one individual temple devotee gets. So he actually gets more benefit than the devotees who are giving it. So these are the underlying cultural things. Is what's the problem? Because what's that spiritual master going to do? He's going to take it out and, you know, go to Vegas or something. He's going to use it for some project within the society. And the temple is a project in the society. And the thing is God's pretty rich. So there's unlimited funds. So it's not that by giving this, then the temple gets any less. No, the person was inspired to do that. That's where he got it. And if they're inspired, they'll also get for the temple. Right? If the temple supports their support of their spiritual master, they're inspired. They want to work for this person. I remember before, is when Prabhupada was president, everybody worked under somebody. Very few had like a direct relationship with Prabhupada. And you were inspired. Why? Because this person inspired you to serve Prabhupada. There was not it's my temple and you work for me. They were inspired because, you know, it made you do something, distribute more books for Prabhupada, collect more money. Money was given to Prabhupada. You were inspired. So you had different people, ways how they managed. You were inspired by them. So you liked working under this senior devotee or that senior devotee. So it's the same principle. So if the temple president supports that, then it's good. There is an etiquette, of course, that, you know, in this, just to say, is that as management, is that if the temple has a certain donor base, and those donors give a specific amount, and they're unable to distinguish between the temple and someone else, then the senior devotee shouldn't cultivate them. You know, in other words, if the person's going to give he gives $10,000 a year to the temple, and he gives that, and he gives something to this preacher, what do you care? It's more money for Krishna. But if he gave him $5,000 and then gives the temple $5,000, says, well, I already gave $5,000 because it's all ISKCON anyway, they shouldn't cultivate those people.
Can I ask a specific question on this?
Yes.
The point is that whoever is in touch with ISKCON, they know that by the nature of the system, one point they have to come to initiation.
Yes.
So you may say, okay, guru should not cultivate specifically a person.
Cultivate monetarily. They can cultivate them spiritually.
Yeah. But that becomes automatically translated.
No, it becomes translated. Then the spiritual master has to make sure that whatever support they're giving to the temple goes on, and then if they want to give more to him, it's beyond that. In other words, their obligations to the help supporting the management of the temple, that should always remain. In other words, it's not resolutions that make the thing. It's relationships. You know, what's that famous one Prabhupada said? You know, something revolution, resolution, dissolution, like no solution. There was one of those kind of. Resolutions don't actually do its relationship. In other words, there has to be a strong relationship between the GBC, the temple president, and the preachers that preach in that zone, whether they're, you know, based in that zone or whether they're traveling. If that's not strong, nothing can be strong. I remember one zone, they have these festivals and all that, and some of the, you know, senior men, the gurus, you know, they hang out together and laugh and, you know, hug each other and, you know, talk. The local devotees were so impressed and so inspired because the personal relationship, you know, because they don't see that in their normal lives. You know, they're always, you know, politicking and this and that. So if that's there, they're inspired. But if the big men politic, then the small man tries to do the best he can in that field, you know, and it'll never be good. There has to be. But it's relationship. It's relationship and education and knowledge. It's not resolutions. Because how many times can you do? How much does the temple president know anyway? You know, if he's there full time and all that, nice. He's out there in the field preaching. But a lot of times the president doesn't have the opportunity for that. He has a family. He can only be so much time at the temple. He has to put in time with the family. He can't go out into all the projects. So he doesn't know what's happening anyway. If a relationship is there, it'll work. But to demand, this is my city, my money, it's kind of like, well, Prabhupada wanted 20 temples in Delhi. Why there's only two? Prabhupada wanted 20. Because Delhi's so big, all the people won't come to, you know, west of Kailash. It's in the middle of nowhere for a lot of people. So he wanted 20 temples so that people could come to all of them. So that means Prabhupada's foreseeing there's enough money there to take care of 20 temples. You know, so why not Bombay? Why not New York? Why not London? There's enough. we, the shortage mentality, but this is the fun part, right? That's the whole thing of rich dad, poor dad. It's all about shortage mentality. If we have a shortage mentality, we fight over money. No, somebody has already got that. Don't fight. Get some other money. Because they're going to use it for Krishna anyway. There's no need to fight. And if there's no fighting, there's more. Right? You know, if the children fight amongst each other over an allowance, then the father doesn't give much allowance. But if they work and somebody needed something, you know, it's like one of the siblings needed something, that, and one of the others gives them part of his allowance, and it works, he'll give them all more money. You know, like that. Because ultimately, that's the third verse is saying, God's a person. We relate to him as a person, we relate to the others as people, the whole system will work. And if we don't, then we're restricted by our mundane abilities. And you know, it's like, how many are, you know, great managers like that? Even the material world. How many people do you hear about? There's how many billionaires, millionaires do we hear about? You know, how many big managers? But it's a handful like that, you know? 20, 30 people, you know, maybe in the world you really hear about out of 6 billion. So it's understood is that if one is working on the spiritual platform, then someone who is actually not a great manager can be a great leader. And because of his leadership, others will come forward. People who are managers like to surrender to leaders. Like that. A good leader is someone who surrenders to another leader. If you don't respect authority, you can never be a leader. You can be a manager, but you can't be a leader. But you even won't be a good manager. So if that element is there, otherwise why you know the temple presidents, they're restricted in their posts, the GBC in theirs, the sannyasis in theirs, gurus in theirs, what's the common element? Lack of respect of authority. Right? When that wasn't there, there was respect of authority. Everything's very opulent. There was no problem. So that being the thing means that no one actually wants to work under each other. So you're on the top of the pile because you don't want anyone sitting on your head. So how far can that get? It can't get far because Krishna works on it. Krishna in Vaikuntha is Asamurdva. No one is equal to, no one is greater than him. But in Goloka, he doesn't work on that at all. Like that. You know, Maharaj Ugrasena is the king. Like that. His parents are superior. And Braj, his parents are superior. Even the Radharani's feet he puts on his own head. So he sees the devotees are on his head. Like that. So that's the difference. But we you know, even though we're actually technically a Raghunuga line, right? But we somehow or another like this Vaikuntha, you know, element of Asamurdva. You know, we want to be on the top, no one's above us. So we're trying to get, you know, control the GBC, control the gurus, you know, control the sannyasis, control the Prabhupadas, make it so that I, as the temple president, you know, all in all. But we're only part, the president's only part of it. Project head is only part of it. He's part of the bigger picture. And if we see it like that, then we're part of a bigger machine, the movement of Lord Chaitanya. You know, like that. Otherwise, you know, it's the, city society for Krishna consciousness, you know, like that.
Maharaj, how can one be instrumental in inspiring others?
How can one be instrumental in inspiring others? By being inspired oneself. That's the main thing. Prabhupada, there's another quote. It didn't come up here yet. Prabhupada says a leader is one who is consistently inspired and is able to inspire others. That's actually a leader. So whatever you're inspired in, you can do that. And then you can inspire others. So that's the main thing. So if you are inspired in your own service and your own devotional life, you'll be able to collect around you others who are like that. That's the main thing. That's what makes a leader. Like that. And someone who consistently needs to be inspired, he's someone who follows. Like that. Does that make sense? Okay, last point, and then we should end.
A spiritual manager, who, whether in a male or female form, has to address his guards. His manager, the managing people, like he's managing or she's managing. The authority should be made in the male mentality Whereas also
is the management in the male mentality?
The idea of the question actually is, while doing, according to what you express about the example you even continue.
I'm just thinking everybody's kind of going now.
Okay.
Would you be able to remember this? We can start with this on Thursday morning.
Okay,
so we'll continue with this on there. Because I think it's going to be a bigger question, be bigger answer.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll end here, and we'll continue Thursday morning.